True Green is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, among others. They'll do all of that so you can do literally anything else. You have better things to do with your free time than focus on your lawn care. Let True Green take care of all the hard work it takes to get a great lawn while you take care of everything else on your to-do list. You can trust True Green to give you the best lawn because they are the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. They offer a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise, which gives you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. Think about how hard it is to manage our fantasy baseball teams. You need all the time you can get to put in waiver wire claims, fab bids, send out trades, and set your lineups. You'll have that extra time when True Green is taking care of your lawn. You do you, let True Green do your lawn care. Visit truegreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people, guaranteed. The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. Nothing beats a weekend away with the family in the great outdoors, whether it's camping, hiking, river rafting, or anything in between. With third-row seating, nobody is left out. The entire family can experience the thrill together. And nobody wants a dead phone. Available dual wireless charging pads make it so nobody gets stuck and we can check our fantasy baseball teams together. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast from CBS Sports.
And first pitch, rushing! Deep left field! This is what it is! Welcome on!
Got a fantasy question? Email fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Get ready to win your league.
Where fantasy becomes reality.
Now here's Frank, Scott, and Chris.
Hey there! Welcome into Fantasy Baseball Today on Wednesday, April 24th. I am Frank Stample, joined by Chris Towers. Today on the show, we've got hitters who are heating up, pitchers off to weird starts this season, some interesting deep league outfielders. But there's only one place we could start. Let's jump in.
I don't believe it! My, oh my!
All right, Chris, I was feeling generous today, and I will pass the Olive Garden breadstick over to you.
Yeah, we talked a little bit, was it yesterday?
I think we
mentioned... About Max Fried.
Yeah, I think so.
And how concerned we are with the way his season is going, and... Just like we did with Vinny Pasquantino a couple weeks ago, we seem to have spurred the breakout because Max Fried had by far his best outing of the season. Complete game shutout. Three hits allowed, six strikeouts, zero walks. It was against the Marlins. And we talked about this a little bit in yesterday's podcast where I think Scott made the point that we typically want to target skills and not matchups when we're talking about pitchers, right? And so far this season, there are a handful of teams that it doesn't really matter if the pitcher's any good. Everybody seems to be doing well against them, and the Marlins are certainly one of those teams. So that does make it a little bit trickier to look at what Max Fried did today and say, okay, he's just Max Fried again. You know, velocity wasn't necessarily where you want it to be, but he pitched really well in spite of it. 14 whiffs on 92 pitches. He was incredibly efficient. But it's the Marlins, so I don't know how, like, I don't know how excited I want to be or I can be about this. I guess how excited I want to be is pretty excited, given how good Max Fried is when he's right. But all in all, obviously, this is what we wanted to see from Max Fried. I don't know if it answers the biggest question that we have about him, because there's no answering the biggest question we have about him, because the biggest question we have about him is, can he stay healthy? But this does, I think, at least answer the can Max Fried be effective at his current level? And clearly the answer is yes. Whether he's going to be Max Fried for the rest of the season, I think is a very different question, but he did exactly what he needed to do to make us feel a little more optimistic moving forward.
He was so incredibly efficient in this start. 92 pitches for a three-hit shutout. And I think most notably, he didn't walk anybody, right? After issuing four walks in his last start. And after that outing, Scott and I spoke about it. I'm not sure if you were on that podcast, but when Max Fried is at his best, he's barely walking anybody.
Yeah.
So that's what kind of set off some red flags. Like, what's going on? He's walking people. So zero walks in this start. I did notice he changed the pitch mix a little bit too. He scrapped the sweeper and the cutter. He threw more changeups and traditional sliders. I don't really know the difference between his traditional slider and his sweeper. But I just wonder if maybe he was trying to throw too many pitches this season. Like, maybe less is more, just condense it, go with what you know best. And that's what he did in this start. And obviously it worked. And Max Fried was amazing. I agree with you. I don't know, where do we go from here? Does this mean that he's healthy right now? I guess. I mean, he looked pretty damn healthy in this start. And I guess there's an argument for, hey, cash out after his likely best start of the season, right? Try and trade him for another top 15 or top 20 starting pitcher. But the way that arms are just dropping this season, Chris, it kind of feels like you should just take your wins when you could get them. And I don't know that anyone is looking to buy Max Fried or, you know, buy high on Max Fried after this start. So I think obviously if you have him on your team, you feel much more reassured after this start. But I think he's just a hold. I think you just kind of stick with it right now.
Yeah, like if someone offered you Jared Jones for Max Fried right now, I think I asked this question yesterday.
You did.
And Scott, I think, said Jared Jones.
I said I would rather have Jared Jones as well.
I honestly, I don't remember what I said. I might have not answered the question, because the nice thing about asking the questions is sometimes you get to get away with not answering the difficult ones. And I would still take Max Fried over Jared Jones. And obviously, I feel a little better about that now after seeing this. And maybe that's why I'm a little more willing to answer that question. But yeah, I think that's the way I would do it. But I think the point is there's a lot of uncertainty still around Max Fried, despite this very, very good start. I think we hope that he builds on it and moves forward, but it's one start. It's against the Marlins, who are, I did this research earlier today for tomorrow's newsletter. There are six teams currently averaging 3.5 runs per game, 3.54 runs per game or fewer in April so far this season. There have only been 23 teams in the last 5 years to average 3.5 runs, 3.54 runs or fewer in April. You do the math on that, it's about, you'd expect about five-ish, 4.5-ish teams per year. So there are some really bad offenses right now, and the Marlins, White Sox, and A's in particular feel pretty hopeless. So it makes it very hard to analyze pitchers who are going against any one of the White Sox, Marlins, or Twins, or A's right now, and also the Twins you can throw in there. That's a semi-professional transition for your oh my goodness gracious player.
Look at this guy, professional broadcaster Chris Towers. Let's talk about Eric Fetty, who had an awesome start at the Twins. It was 6 innings, 1 run, 11 strikeouts, a career high for him, to 0 walks. He had 17 swinging strikes on 95 pitches. 6 of those came on the sinker, 5 on the cutter, 5 on the splitter. He had everything working, and much like Max Fried, maybe less is more, because Eric Fetty introduced a sweeper this season coming back over from the KBO, and he faded the sweeper in this start. He went with just the cutter, the sinker, the splitter, and it was a good choice because his sweeper has been getting destroyed this season. As you mentioned, entering this start, the Twins were 28th in WOBA versus right-handed pitching, so they've been pretty bad. But now we're, 4 or 5 starts into Eric Fetty's season. He's got a 2.73 ERA, a 1.14 whip, 10.3 K per nine, a 47% ground ball rate. He's 29% rostered. I don't want to say he is a must add, but after a start like this, I think he's probably one of the most interesting waiver wire pitchers we've talked about this week.
You just, like, if you just hope for a rainout, he's like, his next start is against the Rays. If he got pushed back one more day, you know who he'd face in his next start? the Twins again. And I'd feel, I mean, the Rays aren't a terrible matchup, and he's got the Cardinals after that who have been awful. But with the way the Twins are hitting right now, you'd love to see him get them again. But no, he talked about after the game how the splitter is such an important pitch for him because he added that pitch. It's he calls it a changeup. Baseball Savant classifies it as a splitter. But he talked after the game about how one thing that's changed from the last time he was in the majors was he didn't have a pitch that could make his fastball play up. And his fastball velocity is up about a mile per hour from where it was the last time he's in the majors. But the changeup slash splitter does potentially make that fastball play a little better. And today it was what? Five whiffs on the splitter, yeah. Six on the fastball. So, you know, if you looked at the pitch level data before this start, you wouldn't necessarily have said, okay, the key is throwing more cutters and splitters, because neither of those pitches had been particularly effective at getting whiffs for him. But yeah, maybe ditching the sweeper, which, as you said, 5.56 expected wOBA was getting crushed.
Yeah.
You know, maybe that is a less is more situation for Eric Fetty, who was getting a decent number of strikeouts before this one. But obviously this one, you know, now he's up to 30 strikeouts in 26 innings as opposed to 19 and 20 innings before this. So, yeah, I feel OK about Eric Fetty. You know, he's 29% roster. That could be higher, especially with Rays and Cardinals in the next two matchups. Should be pretty good matchups there. But I think it's unlikely Fetty's going to be a must-start pitcher moving forward.
The one thing I will add to Fetty, and props to Scott, because he brought this up in the preseason, one of the players he loved, Eric Fetty, and mm-hmm. something that he brought up was that before Fetty went to Korea to play in the KBO, he worked with, I think, the same pitching coach or some type of pitching coordinator who worked with Logan Webb. And when mm-hmm. I was watching the highlights of this start, it looked a lot like Logan Webb. I mean, his splitter and the sinker, it gets so much horizontal movement, like moving away from left-handed bats. And that's pretty much the mold, right, for Logan Webb. He just, mm-hmm. he has a 5-6 mile per hour difference, and it's eerily similar to what Eric Fetty did in this start. So, yeah, props to Scott, because I know he brought up, you know, that comp before, or the fact that, you know, they might have worked together. It was something like that, but it really...
Yeah, they're workout partners, yeah.
It looked a lot like Logan Webb when I looked at the highlights. The most added starting pitchers on CBS right now, would you rather take Logan Webb? Logan Webb. Imagine he was a free agent, that would be...
Yeah, no, definitely Logan Webb.
Only when I drop him. Eric Fetty or Mitchell Parker?
Oh, I think I'd go Fetty.
How about Eric Fetty or Ryan Weathers? I guess Ryan Weathers is most added because he was a two-star pitcher.
Yeah, I mean, Fetty should be two starts as well. I would go with, I guess, Fetty, just because his most recent start was good and Weathers' most recent start was pretty mediocre.
Yeah, I think I would too. Edward Cabrera, I think we would take
Cabrera for sure.
Yeah, take a shot on Cabrera there. How about Keaton Wynn?
I think I would go with Fetty. That might honestly just depend on what Keaton Wynn's next matchup is.
Yeah. Yeah, they probably are most likely just matchup plays moving forward. Last one for you, Bryce Elder, who had a solid start yesterday in his return to the majors, but it was against the Marlins.
I didn't believe in Bryce Elder when he was an all-star last year, so I don't think there's anything in the time since then that would make me more of a believer, so I'm fine going Eric Fetty over him, yeah.
There you go. So Eric Fetty should be somewhere near the top of the most added starting pitchers mm-hmm. by the end of this week on CBS. Honorable mention to Ellie De La Cruz, who continues his torrid run, 1-for-3 with a sock and a shoe, his 7th homer, his 12th stolen base. And on the season, he's batting .295. He's got 22 runs scored, 17 RBI, an OPS over 1,000. His 150 game pace, 45 homers and 78 steals for Ellie De La Cruz.
Not and like 150 runs. It's, yeah.
Not sure that he's going to get there, but, cannot argue with what he's doing right now. He looks like one of the best fantasy players in the league. Just one of the best players. I saw him made an awesome defensive play too, just running all the way out into left field. He is just so fun to watch.
He's electric.
That is Ellie De La Cruz. Chris, I know we don't talk about standings often here, But I just thought some things were noticeable early in the season. The Astros are 7-17, 10 games under 500 for the first time in 8 years. And I think that says more about them than anything else. Just how good they've been. They haven't been 10 games under in 8 years. Just weird start to the season for the Astros.
They've made the American League championship series every single one of those years, haven't they?
I don't know if it was everyone.
Isn't it like 7 years in a row?
They might have. You might be right about that. I wonder, obviously they've dealt with a lot of injuries. I also wonder if it's the Dusty Baker effect too. I don't know. We'll see what the Astros do. It's a long season, obviously. And in the meantime, the Guardians are 17-6, the best record in baseball. So shout out to them.
Quickly. I knew the Astros were struggling. Genuinely had no idea the Guardians were 17-6. That is actually, I didn't know that. You're just telling me this now.
People who I meet, they ask what I do and I tell them, they say, what do you think about this team? And then I have to think about it and I don't usually know the standings. Everything we do is so focused on player analysis that sometimes just the macro level stuff in baseball, I'm not even sure. I don't even know if I should say that on this podcast.
They just must have like a one ERA for their pitching, for their bullpen right now. Cause like their starters outside of Bieber haven't really been that great. So it must just be that their bullpen has a 2.11 ERA. Their starters have a 3.79 ERA. I guess they've been pretty good.
You hold your tongue when talking about Ben Lively.
who
we'll get to a little bit later on. Quickly promote a few things. The FBT newsletter. Sign up if you haven't already. If you're watching live on YouTube, you can scan the QR code. Chris does a great job, and it gets emailed directly to your inbox every single day. If you scan that QR code, it takes you right to the website. Click on that FBT logo, punch in your email address, and it's easy as that. Let's take our first break. When we return, we'll have the news and notes right after this.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
The news and notes. Gerrit Cole extended throwing to 120 feet on Tuesday. Aaron Boone said Cole could begin throwing off a mound sometime next week. He's on a 60-day IL, so the earliest we could see him is late May, I believe, but sounds like everything's moving in the right direction for Gerrit Cole so far. Rafael Devers was not in the lineup again on Tuesday. Alex Cora previously said he expected Devers back for this game.
He's played 3 of the last 13 games without going on the IL. This is really dumb.
It's a mess. Yeah. I have leagues where Devers is just in my lineup because either A, I thought he was going to be back on Tuesday like they said he was going to be, or B, I have so many injuries on multiple teams that I can't afford to drop anybody. So I'm just got to roll with Rafael Devers. Tristan Casas has been diagnosed with a fracture in his left rib cage and will be out, quote, a while. And it's obviously a rough go for one of the top breakout options this season. Bobby Dalbec started at first base on Tuesday.
Yeah, I mean, this offense, like, Rafael Devers needs to get back real soon because no Casas, no Devers, no Trevor Story for whatever that's worth. This looks like a pretty brutal lineup for the. I mean, Sadam Rafaela is batting leadoff with a 4.69 OPS, and Willier Abreu's batting cleanup.
Whoa!
I mean, he's having a good season so far, but like that's a tough place to be.
Yeah, they had Rob Refsnyder, Emmanuel and Manuel Valdez, Bobby Dalbec, and Pablo Reyes all in the lineup here
on
Tuesday.
It's not what you want.
No, it is not. Nolan Jones was removed from the game due to back stiffness. He's been so bad this season, it wouldn't surprise me if he's currently playing through something. He dealt with a few injuries throughout spring training, too, so maybe that's just part of the reason for the slow start. With Nolan Jones, Cody Bellinger left Tuesday's game with a right rib contusion. He ran into the outfield wall on a catch attempt out there, mm-hmm. and x-rays were negative, but Bellinger's apparently dealing with quite a bit of soreness. My guess is he could get a few days off here. Hopefully he doesn't land on the IL. Lane Thomas was also removed with an apparent leg injury. Fun fact, he's third in baseball with 11 steals. And once he got removed from the game, I had a few people in the mentions talking about James Wood. And so I don't know if that will happen, but
I'd be shocked if
Lane Thomas goes on the IL, there's a non-zero chance. So we'll see. Josh Jung will have his fractured wrist examined on Friday. Merrill Kelly was officially placed in the IL with a right shoulder strain retroactive to April 20th. Tommy Henry was recalled from AAA. Justin Steele went through PFPs on Tuesday. He also threw a live batting practice on Sunday. Steele could be cleared for a rehab assignment soon. Kyle Hendricks was placed in the IL with a lower back injury retroactive to April 22nd.
Yeah, his ERA was killing him.
Killing my NL labor team. I was so thankful that I could just put him on the IL before this start happened. Ryan Mountcastle remained out of the lineup Tuesday with knee soreness. Heston Kjerstad was in the lineup in right field. He was batting eighth, and I believe it was 0 for 4 with at least two strikeouts from what I saw. It might have been three. Taijuan Walker will return to the Phillies rotation Sunday against the Padres. No word yet if Spencer Turnbull is out of the rotation. I guess his start on either Wednesday or Thursday might determine that. DJ LeMahieu started a rehab assignment Tuesday and said he expects to play. He started a rehab assignment, but then I didn't update this news item. He left the rehab assignment and he's heading back to New York to get tests done. So not good for DJ LeMahieu. Taj Bradley is expected to report to AAA later this week to begin a rehab assignment. And the Cubs DFA'd Garrett Cooper and recalled our old friend Matt Mervis in 18 games at AAA this season. He was batting .288 with 5 home runs, 14.6% walk rate, 23% strikeout rate. He was hitting the ball extremely hard. It also came with a 14% swinging strike rate. He got the start here on Tuesday. He went 0 for 3 with a strikeout. I don't think there's anything actionable yet, Chris, with Matt Mervis, but I think he's a name to watch.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, he's got huge raw power and put up some pretty good numbers at the minor league level. And, you know, it's one of those situations where the plate discipline was pretty awful when he got called up, 32% strikeout rate. The underlying stuff was like bad, but in a sort of normal way, right? Like 77% zone contact rate is not good, but it's not so disastrous that you think he can't overcome it. So we'll see with Matt Mervis.
All right, let's talk about some hitters who are starting to pick things up. Julio Rodriguez. Remember when everybody was freaking out? 1 for 3 with his first home run, 110.5 exit velocity, 435 feet. And over the last 7 games, Julio Rodriguez is batting .452 with 1 homer, 4 steals, and a .1068 OPS. I know we've preached this before, but patience. It is a very long season, and we know Julio Rodriguez is uber talented. Cal Raleigh is red hot all of a sudden, 2 for 4 with his 6th home run. He's homered in 4 of his past 5 games. Christian Encarnacion Strand is picking things up. He went 3 for 4 with a double, 2 runs, and 2 RBI over his last 7. He's batting .321 with a homer, 8 RBI, and an .892 OPS. Byron Buxton hit a clutch home run in the 9th inning. It was 110.5 exit velocity. Over his last 7 games, he's batting .333 with a homer. I also noticed the plate discipline for Buxton. Not that he's ever been a standout there, but 1 walk to 25 strikeouts. That is not going to get it done. Chris, anything you'd like to tack on here for Buxton, CES, Raleigh, and Julio, who are turning things up?
No, I mean, I think CES and Byron Buxton are the two that you'd have the most concern about, if anything, because Buxton was so bad last season. CES is so unproven, but I think the upside for both of them is still so high that there was really no way I was going to consider dropping either. Buxton, I guess, because you got him so late and he hasn't really done anything, that there was a chance you could drop him and nobody would pick him up immediately. But I don't want to give up on a guy with, I mean, legitimately 35 homer upside because of a bad 3 weeks. So no, I'm happy to see all of those guys doing well in whatever time frame they have done well.
Encarnacion Strand, if we're talking about Buxton's plate discipline, just worth mentioning, CES has one walk to 26 strikeouts as well.
So that's not great.
That's not really his calling card, but he's still hitting the ball really hard, and the expected stats look pretty good for Encarnacion Strand. So I think your buy low window, I don't know that it's already closed, but it might be closing. So if you want to try and get Encarnacion Strand, you might want to try and do it right now. Hitters who are off tonight starts who we haven't really talked about this season. Riley Green, shout out to you, Chris. 2-for-3 with a walk and a double dong, 3 RBI. He's only batting .247. That comes with a .402 on base percentage. He's got 20 runs scored, a .908 OPS, 21 walks on the season. He's, you know, they moved him up to leadoff spot, and he looks like he has just completely embraced that spot. Isak Paredes also off to a nice start, 2-for-4 with his 6th home run. He also has 16 RBI and .873 OPS. Noticed his pull rate is actually down quite a bit from last year. Everything else looks the same. It's a ton of fly balls. The quality of contact is not good, but we're going on, you know, 7 months worth of Isak Paredes doing this now. I think we just kind of got to trust it at this point. Logan Ohapi also off to a nice start, 2-for-4 with a double, a run, and an RBI. He's batting .329 with an .876 OPS, hitting the ball hard. Expected stats look good. Just an opportunity to talk about these names, Chris. We haven't really mentioned them yet, but Ohapi, Paredes, and Riley Green.
Yeah, in Green's case, the one thing that's interesting is he's actually cut the strikeout rate a little bit, but the batting average and expected batting average have both plummeted. So he's not hitting as many fly balls as he did last season. He's traded some fly balls, not hitting as many line drives. Excuse me. He's traded some line drives for both ground balls and fly balls, but he hits the ball really hard, really consistently, and he's getting on base a ton. I thought that a points league would be his worst format, but based on what he's doing so far, maybe that's not the case. But I still have a lot of faith in Riley Green being a very productive hitter. And Logan Ohapi, I mean, he's one of those guys that what he did last season was impressive enough on the surface. But then if you remember, he missed like, 3 months with what we thought at the time was a season-ending shoulder injury. And he was hitting for a ton of power, if I'm remembering correctly, early on. He came back and was still super productive. The shape of that production was slightly different. But he's clearly an incredibly talented young hitter, especially for a catcher. And I think he's top 8 at the position for me after Francisco Alvarez's injury. So expectations are very high for Logan Ohapi.
Last thing I'll add on Riley Green, and I'm not saying that he's Juan Soto, but he's kind of doing the Juan Soto thing where he's just walking so much. And although he hits a lot of ground balls, his barrel rate is super high. Mm-hmm. And what I've always said about Soto is that when he gets the chance to do damage and put a ball in the air, that's exactly what he does. And Riley Green is doing that. Like when he gets a pitch that he can elevate, he's just doing damage on those pitches. And it's just really nice to see. I think anytime you get a hitter in the American League Central where it's lots of cold weather cities and they still get off to a good start, I'd feel really good about having Riley Green right now. Let's talk about some pitchers who are off to weird starts this season. Pablo Lopez. We spoke about the White Sox and how great of a matchup they should be. And then Pablo Lopez comes out and just has a stinker against this team. 4 innings, 3 runs allowed, 6 strikeouts, only 5 swinging strikes on 76 pitches. He gave up some hard contact. Looks like he did not have any of his secondary pitches. He just went fastball heavy in the start, threw it 61% of the time. Mm-hmm. His velocity was also down. I saw afterwards, they said there's no concern physically. It might have been related to the weather. It was 52 degrees in Minnesota in this start. And, you know, just on the season, he's had 2 great starts, 3 not-so-great starts. It's a .439 ERA, but all the peripheral stats still look really good. It's just kind of been a bit of a weird start for Pablo.
Yeah, there was a lot of concern because I think the last fastball he threw in this start was 91 miles per hour.
That's not good.
That's not good because I think the first one he threw was like 96 or something. So yeah, that's a significant difference. But yeah, after the game, both he and the manager said that he was fine physically. There was nothing wrong. The quote was like, it was a mentality slash conviction issue. And that's why his velocity was down. I don't necessarily know what to make of that, but if they're not concerned, I'm not going to be concerned. I think weird is the right word for the way Pablo Lopez's season has gone so far, because it hasn't been nearly as effective as last season. And you look into the underlying numbers for the Arsenal and nothing really looks out of whack. Like the whiff rates, the quality of contact, all for the most part looks very similar to what it was last season. So I don't really have any reason to think he pitched over his head last season. I don't really have any reason to think that he's suddenly a significantly worse pitcher. So my concern level on Pablo Lopez is extremely low.
Kevin Gausman turned in a quality start, but also kind of a weird one. 6 2/3 innings, 3 unearned runs, only 2 strikeouts to 1 walk, 4 swinging strikes on 99 pitches. Just leaned all the way into his splitter in this start. Kevin Gausman did 52% usage, and it was not a good pitch for him. This was his first time throwing more than 5 innings in a start this season. He's got a 5.57 ERA, a 1.57 whip. He dealt with the shoulder in spring training, so this might also be start of like, it might be an extended spring training for Kevin Gausman, I guess you could say, but I feel like he's just gone through these, I guess, kind of wacky or inconsistent stretches because he's a splitter pitcher, and a pitcher who relies on that pitch that much, these things could kind of happen sometimes.
Yeah, and it's not just that he's a splitter pitcher, but he's really, for the most part, one of the most extreme two-pitch pitchers in baseball. And that might just leave him with a narrower margin for error than some of the other pitchers in his range. And maybe coming back from that shoulder injury, he's just not 100% there yet. Not to say that he's not 100% healthy. It just, like you said, he's working his way, his arm strength up. Maybe he's, you know, where he would normally be at the end of spring training. And I can't say I have no concerns given the shoulder issue and the fact that his velocity has been down. It was down again in this start after being up in his most recent one before that. So it's concerning. I think I lean towards Kevin Gausman being a buy low candidate, but I wish I could say that with more conviction.
If you can turn Max Fried into Kevin Gausman, would you do it?
I'd rather have Gausman, yes.
All right, let's talk about Grayson Rodriguez. He was hit hard at the Angels, 4 1/3 innings, 11 hits, 7 earned runs, but he had 7 strikeouts to 1 walk and 14 swinging strikes. So, like these others, quite a weird start. He hadn't allowed more than 3 earned runs in a start since July 17th of last year, but it was lots of hard contact in this one. And looking into Grayson Rodriguez, I don't really understand what's going on. I feel like we've had a conversation about this, Chris, the slider cutter kind of thing that he's throwing this year. And it looks like he's ditched his slider from last season and he's throwing a different version of the cutter. The cutter was really bad for him last season. The velocity on this cutter is down almost 3 miles per hour, but the spin rate on the pitch is up. So I wonder if he's just kind of blended his slider and his cutter together, and this is the pitch that Grayson Rodriguez has come up with. Maybe it's the Corbin Burns effect, who is now his teammate and on the pitching staff. And obviously he throws an amazing cutter. What do you make of Grayson Rodriguez's season so far?
So one thing that I had seen when he made his last start, Grayson Rodriguez, was, I think it was Craig Goldstein from Baseball Prospectus had pointed out that their version of, I think they have their own like proprietary stuff slash pitching quality slash arsenal stat. And their version of that was picking up on two separate pitches. They were picking up on both a cutter and a slider. And that's probably the explanation for why the cutter velocity is down from last season, is that Baseball Savant is still classifying both pitches as a cutter, but they're probably different pitches. But yeah, I mean, the cutter was a pretty bad pitch for him last year when he threw it, which wasn't all that often. It hasn't been a very good pitch for him this season either. 390 expected WOBA, lowest whiff rate among his pitches. So I don't know. I think he is Grayson Rodriguez, that is still kind of figuring out what the best approach is. He gave up four batted balls on that pitch today, 101 mile per hour average exit velocity. So I remain optimistic, but it's been a rougher ride than we hoped, given that Grayson Rodriguez looked like he had figured it out in the second half of last season. And I think it might just be the case that he's not quite an ace yet, is maybe the way I'd say it, that he's a really good pitcher, top 20 in fantasy, but probably not a top 10 guy.
There might be a buy low window here because the ERA is 4.45. Mm-hmm. The FIP is 3.57. It's a 3.36 XFIP, 10.8 K per nine. So everything under the hood looks pretty good for Grayson Rodriguez. Would you rather have him or Max Fried?
Ooh, I think I'd rather have Grayson Rodriguez. Yes, I had Grayson Rodriguez ranked ahead before this start. I'm not going to change that.
Okay. Michael King had a rough start in Coors Field, 3 2/3 innings, 6 runs allowed. 4 of those were earned. 3 more walks in this one. He now has 3+ walks in 3 of 6 starts. He's up to 5.3 walks per 9 on the season. Mm-hmm. His career before this season, 3 walks per 9. So I keep saying and thinking that the walks are going to get better and the control is going to improve for Michael King. I don't know if there's much we could take away from this specific start in Coors Field, Chris.
Yeah.
But I still have to think that there is going to be some kind of regression on the control here.
The thing that's so hard about this, though, is, and I agree, we shouldn't take anything from almost any start at Coors Field. Remember Ryan Feltner had 10 strikeouts in a Coors start a couple weeks ago? He hasn't come anywhere close to that since. Coors is a weird place to pitch. And even if you have a seemingly good matchup, it's not really about the quality of the hitters that you're facing. Your pitches do not move the same at elevation. And so I don't want to take anything from this. The thing with Michael King is I don't know how much his career numbers matter in projecting forward, right? Like, okay, he had a 7.4 walks per night or 7.4% walk rate last season, 8% in 2022. He wasn't starting. True. I mean, like, he was for a month, but he wasn't going as deep into games as he's being asked to right now. He wasn't doing that while being expected to continue doing it for the next 5 months after this, which is there's a big difference, I think, between getting to September and saying, you just got to make it through your next 5 starts and getting to being in April, making 5 starts and knowing I got to make 28 more if I stay healthy. And so I tend to think that what we're seeing from Michael King is more like what he is as a starter than what he was as a reliever. And I'm pretty uninterested in him. I don't know if I'd necessarily say I can drop him, but I'm not viewing Michael King as a difference maker. He's outside my top 60 starting pitchers, and that was before this start.
Okay, I still have him top 40. I've got a rankings update coming Wednesday, and I think I was just a high guy on Michael King coming into the season. He is going to drop down a little bit for me just because he has been so inconsistent this year, and I can't dispute that at this point, and there just have been so many starting pitchers who have elevated their game since the start of the season, so he'll drop down a little bit. I will say if anyone is on the verge of dropping him, I would just try like the ultimate buy low offer and just see if I can get Michael King for next to nothing.
By the way, before we move on, you didn't mention it in the news and notes, but I don't want to get too deep into the start or into the podcast without mentioning Framber Valdez may pitch this weekend.
Yes, that was, I believe he threw a bullpen either yesterday or Sunday.
Yeah, and they mentioned he might start in that Mexico City series against the Rockies. Yeah, the start with Michael King here jogged my memory of that from earlier today. And to be clear, if Framber Valdez returns this weekend, do not start him.
No.
Because the Mexico City ballpark is, I think, about 2,000 feet, maybe 2,300 feet higher in elevation than Coors Field. And is also a really small park relative to Coors Field. Coors Field is actually the largest park in the majors. There were, I think, 11 home runs hit in one of those two games last year. I think there might have been like 15 in the two games combined. So don't start Framber Valdez, but I wanted to make sure we didn't go too far into the podcast without mentioning that Framber Valdez could be back this week.
Yes, and that is definitely fair. I'm just going to throw the last four names that I have on this list at you because I want to keep things moving after this. But Luis Severino, a quality start at the Giants, continues to not have his slider. Yeah. The underlying numbers are still pretty good, though, and he's getting lots of ground balls. I wonder if this is just a different version of Severino that could be good, but just not as good as we've seen in the past. James Paxton doesn't look anything like the same pitcher from the Red Sox last year. He has 17 walks to 11 strikeouts over 20 and a third innings, and he's still 93% rostered. That feels like that should not be the case. Like, I think I would drop James Paxton for Eric Fetty if I could. And then two other names, Christopher Sanchez and Andrew Abbott. They both had rough starts going up against each other. Sanchez, the control is a little bit worrisome because outside of last season, he was not a good control pitcher. And so far this year, it's up over four walks per nine. But man, everything else still looks really good. So I think I'm buying Christopher Sanchez and Andrew Abbott. I just don't trust it.
I think you could go ahead and drop Andrew Abbott and not really have any concerns about it. Because
would you drop him for Fetty?
Sure. I mean, I would drop him, I guess, if there are any leagues where Edward Cabrera is available and Andrew Abbott is on your roster, go ahead and do that first. But yeah, I'm fine with that. I'm fine with dropping James Paxton as well. Sanchez, I think I was maybe a little more skeptical of him than you and Scott were coming in. So I'm a little more inclined to be concerned about the control, but I wouldn't be actively looking to drop him right now. And Severino, I guess part of my struggle is that I am maybe anchoring to the person that Luis Severino used to be. And, you know, he had that incredible slider and was one of the best strikeout pitchers in baseball. And maybe he just can't be that anymore, but he can still be an effective pitcher. But it just, I don't know, man. It feels like, was last year or was it 2 years ago, the year when Noah Syndergaard like got off to a decent start, had a decent ERA, but wasn't getting any strikeouts. And it would just, that's what it feels like, where like, yeah, maybe he can still be effective for stretches, but I don't have much reason to believe that Luis Severino is like a must roster pitcher moving forward.
I would agree with that if the strikeout rate was lower, but so far it hasn't been terrible.
It's okay.
8.7 K per nine and a 58% ground ball rate.
Like, yeah.
If he holds those two rates, he could still be good.
Yeah, I guess there's an aspect of like damning with faint praise and saying that like, I guess he could be like Ranger Suarez.
Yeah, which, you know, that's
could be a useful pitcher. Yeah,
a top 50-ish starting pitcher, right?
Like, he doesn't have the control that Suarez does. So that's the thing, is that you're looking at it's like an 11% K minus walk ratio, or at least it was entering today. I don't know what it is after today. I don't know. Maybe I'm being unfair to Luis Severino because I want him to be something else. And maybe I'm holding that against him, and I'll grant that might be unfair. So
I was pretty skeptical just going into his Fangraphs page before I got there. I was expecting to see something completely different, but the fact that all the underlying numbers look pretty good, I don't know. He might just be a different version of Severino that's serviceable, but just doesn't have as high of upside as he once did. Let's take our final break. When we return, we'll get to some of the hitters here on Fantasy Baseball Today.
Paramount Plus and the National Park Foundation present A Mountain of Zen. This Earth Week, you can live stream seven national parks for 7 days on Paramount Plus. Paramount Plus, official streaming partner of the National Park Foundation.
You can now relive the best moments of the UEFA Champions League 24/7. The UEFA Champions League channel is a new 24-hour streaming channel serving nonstop goals, highlights, and full match replays from the world's most prestigious club competition. Reminisce on your favorite moments, legendary players, and brilliant goals with the UEFA Champions League channel, streaming around the clock on Pluto TV and the CBS Sports app.
Welcome back in. Let's talk about some waiver wire hitters and names that we've brought up over the past couple days, but they are both still widely available. Willy Abreu went 1-for-4 with his second home run. He's off to a nice start with the Red Sox, 278 batting average, two homers, four steals, and 862 OPS. He's hitting the ball hard so far, and the plate discipline is okay. He's walking, but also has a 29% strikeout rate. And Mark Canna, back-to-back games with a home run for him. He is up to five homers, batting 260, 932 OPS. He is walking a ton, a 14% walk rate. Both are under 30% rostered, Chris. If we're talking about a five outfielder league, who would you rather add between Abreu or Mark Canna?
Probably just depends on what your team needs, right? Like if it's an OBP league, I think Canna's a fairly easy choice. But if you need speed, especially, then Abreu is obviously going to be a better option there. He has played 47 games at the major league level so far. He's hitting like 300 or something overall, but I don't expect that to continue. You look at the underlying numbers, they're not nearly that good, but his 162 game pace is 12 homers, 22 steals in the majors. And he hit leadoff for the Red Sox today, and he might, you know, continue to remain at the top of that lineup for a while, or at least near the top of the lineup. So yeah, I think Willy Abreu is probably under rostered at 24%, and in any categories league, he probably deserves a little more love. Sure.
Could any of these deep league hitters be a thing? Lawrence Butler, a name we have not talked about. He went 1-for-4 with his second home run. He's batting 190. He's got a 634 OPS. He plays for the Oakland A's, one of those really terrible lineups. He also has a 94.5 average exit velocity. The expected stats are awesome. It could just be small sample noise, but based on just basing our decisions on the underlying metrics, things that we look at for every hitter, Lawrence Butler looks pretty damn interesting. Mike Tauchman had a big game, 2-for-3 with a double dong, 4 RBI. He has started 4 straight games for the Cubs, who are dealing with some injuries right now. Trevor Larnach of the Twins is hitting well since being recalled. He went 2-for-4 with his second homer, 110 exit velocity, 433 feet. He's always had lots of power potential, just has not been able to make contact enough, but he's getting an opportunity to play right now. And Joe Adell, 2-for-3 with a double, a run, and an RBI. He's only started 3 of the past 5 games. He really hasn't played that much, but he also had a big game on Monday. He went 1-for-3 with a sock and a shoe. He's got 2 homers, 5 steals so far. He's batting 314. The quality of contact is very weird right now for Joe Adell. Could any of these deep league outfielders be a thing, Chris? Would you be looking to add any of them in like a 15-team league? Adell, Larnach, Tauchman, Lawrence Butler?
I wouldn't think that any of those guys are really worth adding in most formats, but Butler has the very interesting quality of contact metrics that you pointed out. He's hitting the ball really hard. He's super tooled up. And he had, I think, pretty good minor league numbers, if I'm remembering correctly. Let me look it up. I was looking up his quality of contact last year in the minors, and it was pretty good, like 90 mile per hour average exit velocity, like 110, 111 max ex velo. He's clearly got tools. And yeah, he's played 89 games between AA and AAA in his career. He has 21 stolen bases, 15 home runs. That's pretty good. With a useful batting average and honestly not that many strikeouts. So I don't know. He's been so bad that like I can't say, yeah, go out and add Lawrence Butler, because there's the opportunity cost, right? And he's not going to be added in most leagues, so you don't have to. Adell, his numbers in AAA are consistently kind of incredible. It was like a 940 OPS last season, 24 homers in 80-something games. Quality of contact is really good for the most part this year. Like you said, weird. He's not hitting the ball hard in terms of average exit velocity, but hard hit rate is okay. Barrel rate's okay. Line drive's really high. The thing right now, though, is he's gone from like disastrous, oh my God, we can't play him contact rates to just kind of mediocre. It's 39 plate appearances, though, so I don't want to overreact to that. But underlying, you know, plate discipline metrics and swing decisions and all that stuff, that can tend to stabilize fairly quickly. And so I think the end zone contact rate is up to like 80% right now. It was below, it was like 71% last season, or 71% for his career. So I want to believe that Joe Adell can be a thing. I'm not going to say he is a thing currently, but he is giving us reasons to be optimistic for the first time in a long time at the major league level. Maybe the first time ever.
Who are you most likely to speculate on if you just have a roster spot in a deep league out of this list? Is it Joe Adell? Is it Lawrence Butler?
For sure. But that might be my own sickness, that I'm just always been a Joe Adell guy.
All right, let's slide over to a few waiver wire pitchers from Tuesday's action. We already spoke about Eric Fetty, who is very clearly at the top of this list, followed by Kenta Maeda, who had one of his better starts of the season, 5 shutout innings with 5 strikeouts, had 12 swinging strikes on 88 pitches, and did change up his pitch mix in this start. He led with the slider. He threw it 34% of the time. His velocity was also up. It's been way down. Not that he ever throws the ball hard, but we're talking 89 miles per hour on his fastball, and it was up quite a bit in this start. And then some names in deeper leagues. Ben Lively has pitched well in 2 starts with the Guardians. Bailey Falter has allowed a total of 4 earned runs over his last 4 outings, and he went 7-plus innings in this one against the Brewers. 1 run allowed, 8 strikeouts with 14 swinging strikes. Jordan Wicks turned in a quality start against the Astros, surprisingly. 6 innings, 2 runs, 4 strikeouts for him. His changeup actually has been awesome this season. I just don't know if he has anything else. And Tommy Henry, who was recalled for the D-backs, it was 6 innings, 1 run, 6 strikeouts for him. Anything here, Chris? Tommy Henry, Jordan Wicks, Bailey Falter, Ben Lively, Kenta Maeda.
I think for the most part, you can write these guys off, but like, Lively has consecutive starts with 7 strikeouts. The Guardians are notably a very, very good pitching development team. I didn't see anything in the data today that suggests that he's a different pitcher than the guy we've seen and been uninterested in for the most part before. So I don't, like I said, I don't really have much reason to be interested in any of these guys, but Lively, the 2 7 strikeout outings in a row is interesting. So we'll see what happens there. And then Falter gets the Rockies away from Coors next week. So that's probably not a bad streaming option in Pittsburgh. I'm not going to say that I think Bailey Falter is going to be someone you're happy to have on your roster for long, but he could very well be very useful next week.
I don't know what he does with his fastball, but yeah, whatever it is, it's been working so far, because the results on balls in play entering the start, 81.7 average exit velocity, a .095 batting average against, a .119 slugging percentage. It's only 91, 92 from the left-hand side, but maybe it's just like a weird arm slot thing or where he commands
13
it,
whiffs today.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think that there's much there, but it's been a really interesting start at least.
Let's get into some other pitching leftovers. Tanner Houck has a quality start in 4 of 5 outings this season. He was at the Guardians. He went 6-plus innings with 2 runs allowed, 4 strikeouts in that one. Ryan Pepiot now has a quality start in 3 of his last 4 outings, and he was up against the Tigers, where he allowed 1 run over 6 innings. Logan Gilbert continues his great start. He was at the Rangers. It was 6 2/3 shutout with 6 strikeouts for him. And Logan Webb has tossed 4 straight quality starts of at least 7 innings, and he was up against the Mets. It's 8 shutout innings, 4 strikeouts. Did surprisingly have 15 swinging strikes on 106 pitches. 13 of those came on the changeup. I know last week Scott expressed a little skepticism. Maybe that's not the right word. A little concern that we haven't seen many whiffs on the changeup this season. That changed big time in this start for Logan Webb. He's just such a unique pitcher, Chris. There's nobody else like Logan Webb right now. The fact that he pitches backwards, the changeup is his most used pitch. He gives up so much hard contact, but all of it just goes right into the ground. He's just a really, really unique pitcher. Anything to add on Webb, Gilbert, Pepiot, and Tanner Houck?
Yeah, I mean, we talk a lot about like regression to the mean, and I think sometimes people take that to mean like a rubber band kind of thing, where like it bounces back. Like, I was trying to make an analogy and I lost it, but basically you shouldn't necessarily expect, when someone's super low at something, for them to bounce back and make up for it, right? Like if a guy has a 15% whiff rate and he usually has a 30% whiff rate, you shouldn't expect a 45% whiff rate to get him back to a 30% whiff rate. I guess that's the way to say it. But sometimes it does happen. Like Logan Webb was not getting whiffs with his changeup at all coming into this start. 9.7% whiff rate with the changeup entering today. And then he got 13 whiffs today, and his changeup whiff rate's probably going to look pretty normal after this one. He's a top 12 starting pitcher in fantasy.
Yeah,
partially because of some injuries, but partially because he's really, really good. Pepio, I cannot figure out. I don't know where you're at on Ryan Pepio, who is not in our starting pitcher rankings. I imagine he will be after this start because I think he got his fifth start and will be SP eligible. But
yep,
we've been getting a lot of questions like, why isn't this guy in your SP rankings? And it's because we literally cannot rank Ryan Pepio as an SP until he's eligible. Right. So that won't happen until this week's updates for us. But we're going to have to make some tough decisions on where to rank this dude. And I really can't figure him out because his four-seam fastball has been by far his best whiff pitch so far. He got four of his eight whiffs with it. That's really hard to keep doing. It's hard to have a 40% whiff rate with a fastball. Really, really yeah. good whiff rates with fastballs are like 30%. And so I tend to view Ryan Pepio as something of a sell high candidate. The command hasn't been as good as it was last year. He's getting more strikeouts to make up for it, but I don't know. I really struggle with him. I think I view him as a sell high candidate though.
What's weird about Ryan Pepio is that his changeup was always his calling card and he's kind of faded it so far this season with Tampa Bay. And it could just be a Tampa Bay thing where he's using this slider slash cutter thing more this season, and it looks pretty good. And as you mentioned, he's getting whiffs with the fastball, and the underlying numbers are okay. It's like a high threes FIP and XFIP. And if he just pitches to that, I think people would be happy with where they drafted him. It was like around 200 in ADP. Just eyeballing the starting pitcher ranks, and again, things are going to change on Wednesday. I think the 50 to 60 range with other names, Tanner Houck, Cutter Crawford, Jack Flaherty, kind of in that range. Does that sound right to you?
Yeah, I think that's reasonable. I think I probably have him lower than that right now, just looking at like other guys who are eligible at both. And maybe I need to move him back. Maybe I need to move him up because like at 69 to 70, I've got Brandon Pfaadt, Charlie Morton, Hunter Brown. I think I'd rather have Ryan Pepio than all those guys. So I think I can slot him into at least the 60s. But like him versus Edward Cabrera, I think is really interesting. I suppose I'd rather have Pepio.
I think so too.
But I think Edward Cabrera might have more upside.
He might. So, it's one of those things. I feel like every comp we make with Cabrera, it's we say the same thing. It's like he has more upside. He has much more downside. And I think Pepio has some downside, too. It's like we haven't seen him do it for that long. But just the fact that he pitches for Tampa Bay and probably doesn't have as much injury risk as someone like Edward Cabrera, I think that's fair to say.
That's fair, yeah.
Let's move on to some hitting leftovers. Did you know the Arizona Diamondbacks lead baseball in runs scored? They had another big game here on Tuesday. They put up 14 runs on 15 hits. They hit three homers. Christian Walker, 2-for-4 with his fourth homer. Lourdes Gurriel, 3-for-5 with a double, three runs scored. Pavin Smith had a huge game, 2-for-5 with a grand slam, six RBI. And no Corbin Carroll in the lineup. We were talking beforehand, Chris. It's a terrible feeling for anyone who drafted Corbin Carroll. You go to the box scores, you're scrolling through, you see, wow, the D-backs have 14 runs. Corbin Carroll must have had a huge game. He's not in the lineup. It's just
didn't have a game at all.
It's a terrible feeling. Steven Matz was the opposing pitcher. He got clobbered, obviously. He gave up seven earned runs. I don't think there was much to take away from, like, Pavin Smith obviously doesn't matter, right? Like anything, any takeaways from the D-backs lineup so far? Obviously, they've been awesome. Might be kind of matchups related. I know they faced the Rockies the first week of the season and just absolutely crushed them.
Yeah. They've been putting up some massive, massive games. I think this was their fourth or fifth game with at least 10 runs. It's weird because you look up and down the lineup, though, and like nobody's having an incredible season outside of Ketel Marte. And Lourdes Gurriel is having a weird season because he's hitting 300. He's got a ton of RBI, Does he still lead baseball in RBI?
Not sure.
If not, he's got to be up there. He added one more today. He's up to 22 for the season. But he's only got an 852 OPS. And that's the second best OPS in the lineup. So it's weird that the Diamondbacks are crushing people to this extent without, like, it's not like the Orioles where you look and everybody's got like a 900 OPS or better. It's kind of a weird start, but I think they're a good lineup. I don't think they're the best offense in baseball, though.
Your league leader in RBI so far, Marcell Ozuna, 27 RBI this season in 22 games. That's like a, I don't know, 175 RBI pace. So just, he's picking up where he left off. Lourdes Gurriel is tied for second with Adolis Garcia and Salvador Perez so far, who has 22 RBI.
He's having an awesome season. He looks like 2021, 2022 Salvador Perez again.
Yeah. One last thing I'll point out on the D-backs. If you have a lefty who's going up against them, a fringe lefty, just think twice about it, because entering this game, they were second in baseball in WOBA against left-handed pitching. My guess is that number is going to go up after crushing Steven Matz here in this game. Some other hitting leftovers. Mike Trout tied for the league lead in home runs. He went 1-for-4 with his 9th home run, and it was a leadoff homer, kind of a throwback game here for Mike Trout, moving him up to the leadoff spot. Gunnar Henderson.
He hadn't hit leadoff in a couple of years. Was Taylor Ward not available for this one?
No, he just typically bats third, I think.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what that was, but that's, I mean, it's one spot in lineup, but I wouldn't mind Mike Trout hitting leadoff moving forward.
You know what was interesting? I was watching that game. I hadn't realized Miguel Sano was playing third base for the Angels.
Oh, yeah.
They were showing him doing defensive drills, and he's making all these crazy plays already at third base.
He lost 60 pounds this offseason.
He's a completely different human being. It's quite the transformation. Gunnar Henderson continues his strong start, 1-for-4 with his 7th home run. Eloy Jimenez had his best game of the season, 2-for-3 with a sock and a shoe. Not that we're expecting him to steal bases, but I guess it's nice if you had him in the lineup. And speaking of stolen bases, Bryce Terang, he was back to running on Tuesday, 1-for-2 with a walk and 2 steals. He is up to 12 stolen bases, which is tied for first in baseball. I don't think that Bryce Terang is going to maintain a 319 batting average or an 847 OPS. But I am starting to buy a little bit more because he's hitting the ball much harder than he was last year. Not that he's hitting the ball incredibly hard, but 88.6 miles per hour for a middle infielder, that's actually pretty damn good. And the expected batting average is 268. I buy it a little bit more than I did maybe the first week of the season. Let's say that.
Yeah, no, and he's the kind of guy that, like, he doesn't need to average 92 miles per hour to be an effective player with his speed and with his contact ability, 15% strikeout rate as well. If he's just decent with the bat and he puts the ball in play and he gets on base, he's going to be a valuable player in a roto league because of those stolen bases. And it did look a little bit like it was just, he had, I don't know, 6 steals in the first 8 games or whatever it was, and then he slowed down, but he's picked the pace back up over the last week or so, and that's a really good sign that he's going to continue running. So yeah, I think Bryce Terang has to be rostered in all category leagues right now, I think.
It could wind up being a weird kind of 260 hitting, 10 homer, 35 or 40 stolen base hitter this year. Just that's not really a player we see often, but that might be who Bryce Terang is.
There might not be that much difference between him and Andrés Giménez, who is not running very much right now, unfortunately.
Yeah, but probably more speed from Terang, but less power. But yeah, I think that's not far off. Some bullpen updates for the Guardians. Emmanuel Clase struck out the side for his 7th save. For the Pirates, David Bednar got the 9th with a 1-run lead. He struck out 1 for his 4th save. That's 3 straight scoreless outings and back-to-back days with a save. I don't know that we're fully in the clear yet, Chris, but obviously I am feeling much better about David Bednar.
Yes, very much so.
Yep. For the Tigers, Jason Foley pitched a clean 9th for his 7th save. For the Yankees, Clay Holmes struck out 2 for his league-leading 9th save. For the Royals, James MacArthur closed out the final 2 innings for in a 1-run game for his 5th save. He's been pretty damn good for the Royals. For the Cubs, weird one. I don't think we need to look too much into this. Yency Almonte entered with 2 outs in the 8th inning Runners on first and second with a four-run lead. So technically a save situation. He got Alex Bregman to ground out, and then he pitched a scoreless ninth for his first save. I still think the next traditional save opportunity will go to Hector Neris. Yeah. For the White Sox, Michael Kopech got the eighth with a three-run lead, facing 9-1-2 in the Twins lineup. He gave up a two-run homer, and then it was Steven Wilson who got the ninth with a one-run lead and gave up two runs, took his first blown save and second loss. It's just a little frustrating, Chris. I understand teams want to use what they consider their best reliever in a high-leverage spot. Maybe that's what they considered here with Kopech, but the White Sox are already a really bad team, and they're not going to get many save opportunities. So just every time they use him in the eighth, it's kind of a slap in the face for fantasy.
In fairness, I expect that he would have gotten the ninth as well.
He might have.
If he had gotten through it, because he has had already three multi-inning outings.
Okay.
Two that were 1 2/3 innings, one that was a two-inning save against Cleveland a couple weeks ago. So I'm not too worried about that. Obviously, I don't love that he blew the save and or I guess didn't blow the save, but didn't get the save, I guess would be the way to say that. I also noticed that like the win probability charts for this one had the White Sox at like 95% in like the seventh inning. And I don't know if there's any situation where I would say that the White Sox should have a 95% chance of winning until there's like two outs in the ninth inning.
And even then.
Yeah.
For the Rockies, Justin Lawrence got the ninth with a three-run lead. He gave up a hit but picked up his first save of the season. I feel like this is the Rockies' first conventional save opportunity all season long. They're also 6-18, so it probably doesn't matter. And I am seeing now that in those West Coast games, Carlos Estevez and Camilo Duvall each picked up their fourth save for their respective teams. To stream or not to stream for Wednesday, and I think we said yesterday, Clark Schmidt against the A's.
Yeah, that's fine.
John Gray against the Mariners.
Yeah, that's okay.
Sean Manaea revenge game at the Giants.
I could see that one being decent just because of where it's at and the Giants aren't a great lineup, but I'd prefer not to.
Yariel Rodriguez at the Royals, maybe?
That's a tough matchup, and he's probably not going to give you five innings, so I have trouble buying into that one. Spencer Turnbull at the Reds. I don't love the situation pitching in Cincinnati, but I've been really impressed with him, so I could see that one being pretty good.
On Thursday, it's not as small of a slate as we usually get. I think there's 10 games on the schedule, but just not many great options here at all. I really don't feel comfortable giving anybody out. I guess if I had to choose one,
I could see a decent Soroka start at the Twins.
Yeah, maybe.
And then if Rafael Devers is still out for the Red Sox, Tristan McKenzie did have his best start of the season in his most recent outing. I still thought he was pretty unimpressive, but the Red Sox could be a decent matchup if Devers is out. So if you truly need to stream someone, I guess those would be the guys.
All right, we're going to wrap there. For Chris, I am Frank. Thanks as always for tuning in to Fantasy Baseball Today. Please make sure to follow and leave a 5-star rating on Apple or Spotify. And we will be back again tomorrow. Bye-bye.
Original docuseries on Paramount Plus.
Why did he kill his family? The answer lies across the ocean and a woman named Sylvie.
She's a can model.
Where desire leads to deception.
I ended up spending $12,000 and $15,000 a day.
It was addictive.
I can't get you out.
And obsession leads to murder.
Who did this to your family?
You can't really maintain a fantasy forever.
Control Alt Desire. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.